Hi, Wine Delusters. Ahead of the season, all about visiting Italy and the wine regions there, I'm re-releasing this episode with the fabulous Katie Clark, the host and founder of Untold Italy. Welcome to the Wine Delust podcast. My name is Janine, and my real passion is travel, and my bucket list is to visit every wine region in the world. In this series, we are heading off from Australia and heading to Bella Italia. I'm speaking to wine experts living in Italy and will share my travel tips on visiting wine regions. So pour yourself a glass and let's go exploring. You may not know the name Katie Clark, but if you're planning a trip to Italy anytime soon, then you will definitely come across her work. Katie is the founder of Untold Italy. What started as a blog has grown to include travel resources, a very popular Facebook group, small group tours in Italy, and a very informative travel podcast, which is how I discovered her. I love exploring slightly off the beaten track, and Katie is all about sharing the highlights of Italy, but really loves sharing the lesser known places to encourage us all to detour a little off the main tourist route. Katie was so generous with her time, and she talks all about the Italian culture. She shares her recent revelation on an Italian wine variety, which may surprise you, as well as some intel on lesser known regions. This is such a wonderful chat and I'm so pleased to welcome Katie Clark. So welcome Katie to the Wine Delust podcast. I'm absolutely thrilled to have you with us today. I discovered you through your Untold Italy podcast, but this is just one little aspect. Can you tell us all about Untold Italy and everything that you offer?
Yeah, sure. So my name's Katie and I'm a digital online research hub for people that are interested in all things Italian. Just to give you a little bit of a background, I was a former IT marketer and when I had my children, I decided that wasn't for me anymore. So around that time, we moved to London for my husband's work. And then I really wanted to explore some different, more creative things. So I started doing some travel blogging. And eventually we did a lot of traveling while we were in London, as Australians do. Yeah, and yeah. We spent a lot of time in Italy because my husband's family is from Italy. And he's still got some relatives there. So we were spending a lot of time there. And I really love Italy. I love everything about it, the food, the people, the wine, everything, the whole thing, how it comes together, the culture, the history. So I've started focusing my writing efforts around Italy and then started a Facebook group, a community where people come together to share their travel tips and ideas and inspiration. And it's grown quite large now. Yeah, it's over 80,000 members.
Wow.
And it's a fun place to be. Everyone's welcome to join. It's called Italy Travel Planning and we'd love to have everyone on board. And we also have a podcast, which I love doing. And the podcast sort of came after that community and absolute joy. I publish every week. And this year I'm really focusing on native Italian guests because there's a lot of people that talk about Italy that are expats or people like me that love Italy. But I think it's really important to share the voices of people that live in the different regions. And you know what? They're fascinating and they're so passionate about what they do. And I get so much amazing feedback from everyone about my guests. All of this, and I've got websites with lots of information if people want to learn about traveling in Italy. And everything is really thoroughly researched and things that I've experienced myself that I like to share because I think what you'll find with Italy is there's a lot of information online, but it gets a little bit repetitive actually. And for me, it's raising up the profile of some of these smaller companies that offer amazing experiences is a real part of what I do as well. Got a sort of secret squirrel agenda with Untold Italy is to help people experience Italy beyond the main tourist destinations, Rome, Florence, Venice, Amalfi Coast and the lakes, etc., and Tuscany. So Italy is so much more than those destinations, which are absolutely incredible, don't get me wrong, and definitely people should see them for themselves. But if you just take a little detour, you're going to find just complete magic, like the things that that many people dream of, the small towns with the cobbled streets, the cute little piazzas, people that want to share their lives with you and their stories and the incredible stories with you. So that's what we're doing on our group tours, which are 100% food and wine focused as well. So,
Excellent.
yeah, I'm working together with my colleague Olivia, and we're really obsessed with great food and wine. And so we're taking people to these lesser-known regions. You know, we want people to have a really great, fun time. If people really want to get involved and really want to find out more about Italy and get a deeper connection with some of our guests and myself, is the best way to do that is to we've got a paid membership which is called Untold Italy Amici. That's just a really fun place where we do a private podcast every month and share really deep secrets. My friend Julia, who lives in Emilia Romagna, she has got some incredible connections to suppliers that work with Massimo Bottura at Osteria Francescana, which is named one of the best restaurants in the world many times
Wow.
over. Yeah, we were so lucky to go to Casaficcio, which is a dairy where they make the Parmigiano Reggiano for Massimo Bottura. And we went to the Batteria, and the Acciaia, where they make the balsamic vinegar, di Modena, for that restaurant as well. So it was, this is top-notch stuff.
Yeah. This is around not far from Bologna area.
Yeah, this is a
Yes.
little area, like it's food heaven, food and wine heaven.
Fantastic. And so how was your trip?
We just came back and we were away for 5 or 6 weeks. Yeah, it
Oh.
was fantastic. It was long overdue, and it was an absolutely wonderful experience. Just heading all over Italy and just connecting with people that I met via the podcast, and really just delving into some of those regions that I loved and some of the regions that I hadn't been to before, and just exploring Italy, little Italy that I love.
Because you've been there several times, so there mustn't be too many more regions to left to explore, or
I think I've got
still
about
tons.
five that I haven't been to.
Wow. Yeah. Gosh. This is where Australia is so different from other countries, especially in Europe, isn't it? Where it's just so condensed and they've got so much culture in lots of little pockets and things compared to our wide open
Yeah.
space here.
Well, you can go from one, part of Tuscany to another, and you've got people speaking a different language almost, and obviously different wines that they make, different food, different types of pasta, and it's incredible. So they have, I mean, Italy's got 20 sort of administrative regions, but within that there's, it's tiny, tiny little principalities and things that have been around for centuries. So
Yeah.
it's not, they're hyper local. There's no better way to explain it than that. They really treasure their own city, their own town, the culture, the people, the wine, and they are so proud. And these rivalries go back centuries. So it's not something that I guess in, modern Australia that we're kind of used to. I'm sure maybe if we looked back at in our Indigenous culture, they may have something similar. And I always like to think of that actually, because the way that Italians think about their land and their connection with the land is so strong. And I think that we have a lot to learn in modern Australia about our connection with the land and how it's all symbiotic and how it works together and how it's connecting people to their communities too.
You're right, that Indigenous history certainly has that.
One of the things that's really interesting about visiting Italian wine regions is that it is all about that intense local knowledge and respect for their environment and how it's changing and adapting to new conditions. So, climate change is like a really big important thing in
Yes.
winemaking in Italy, because at the moment they're going through a drought, which actually might be quite good for some of the wine regions, because they don't some of the areas don't need a lot of rain to produce amazing wine. But it's a little bit scary for them as well, and they're going to have to, make some adjustments to what they do.
In your experience, do they use quite traditional methods still, or have they become quite modern with their what you've seen with winemaking, or?
You know, what I really love about Italians is their respect for the past and their respect for tradition, and but also it's a very modern country. They've got, like some of the most incredible design and industrial companies have come out of Italy. And the magic happens when these two things meld together and you've got that tradition and then you've got the innovation on top of that. So you can see some really exciting things happening with some of the younger winemakers and some of the regions that you might not expect or know too much about. And then one of the things that I wanted to mention that was something that was like a massive revelation to me was I started getting into Lambrusco in a big way when we were there.
I'm so excited to hear this because it's got such a bad reputation in Australia from the 80s and everything. So please tell us more. Yeah. That sounds great.
Well, let me tell you, I've had my Lambrusco experiences when I was a teenager. And it wasn't pretty. And so I think we just have this image of this wine as it's really gross and but it's so amazing. And it's actually one of the most popular wines in Italy. And I learned what went wrong. This is a really light wine. It's got a light frizzante or fizz to it. I think what happened was it was overproduced. They were victims of their own success. There was a marketing campaign, Lambrusco this, Lambrusco that. They started producing in glass and not paying attention to the quality of the wine that was being made. The thing is, it's a very young wine and it's not for cellaring. It's got to be drunk really quickly once it's made. So you can imagine they're making all this wine and then they're like, oh, how do we get rid of it? Maybe we should ship it to Australia. 6 months on the boat or however long it took, you know, and by the time it got to the shelves and everything, it was never supposed to be drunk in that way. What I found when I was in Emilia Romagna is that this is an amazing, light, refreshing wine that goes absolutely perfectly with the dishes that they make there, which is very rich in flavour and fat content because you're talking mortadella, prosciutto di Parma, and all of these really Parmigiano Reggiano, all these really rich flavours. And so what it does is it balances, it works with the food, and it just is just this really amazing flavor bomb in your mouth. And you're like,
oh, that's so good.
I get it now.
Yes.
I get the Lambrusco. Because that's what Italian wine is meant to be drunk with food. There's very few contemplative wines. You know, like people don't just have a glass of wine. They sit down for dinner or lunch with a glass of wine. And so it's meant to be consumed with food. And so everything is balanced. That's why you should always try local wine, and even the house wine is always really good, and you can always just try it if you like. So I really would always just default to that situation if you're in a restaurant, because that's what they make it for. They make it to match with their cheese, they make it to match with their cured meats and their pasta dishes, and it works.
And that sounds great, because I understand that Italy has all these regions and every region has their own wine and they've got their own sort of specialised dishes, so they would complement each other. So that sounds like a fabulous way to travel Italy, is try the local dishes with the local wines wherever you are.
Yeah, I've got to say it's pretty tough to do that. There's a winemaker in Umbria and they've got some really cool ways of using amphorae, which are the old clay terracotta pots. So they age their wines in amphorae. Why not? They were doing that 2,000 years ago. So it's all cyclical and it's all coming back. And Umbria, like, so underrated. And let me tell you, it's an amazing, amazing region that there's no one there. We were there in the middle of June, which everywhere else in Italy is absolutely packed. And it's so quiet and it's so lovely.
Did you go to the super flower friendly festival?
I didn't, but my colleague Olivia did. Yes. And she had an incredible time. She just loved it, every second of it. And here again is this community and this sense of community. So for people that don't know about the flower festival in Spello, it's the Infiorata, and it celebrates the festival of Corpus Christi each year. So what the villagers do is they go around and they collect flowers and the petals of the flowers, and they make these incredible artworks and carpets of artwork across the whole town. There's a ceremony where basically it gets all trampled on and destroyed. But prior to that, it's this gorgeous display of stunning floral designs that the whole communities come together to work towards, and not only, you know, go and collect all the flowers and everything, but also do the design, and everyone's involved from little kids up to adults and nonnas, and it's brilliant. And this is the sense of community that I think really attracts people to Italy, and it's amazing. And of course there's feasting afterwards.
Great,
why not? So if anyone's interested, we've also got a tour going there. We do have a morning in Spello for the Infiorata. So if anyone would like to experience that for themselves will be doing that and getting up early, because you have to be up, I think it's 6 o'clock in the morning to catch everything before all the flowers get trampled on. But
fantastic. Yeah.
Everyone needs to go to Sicily, and you need to spend at least 2 weeks there. It's just this chaotic mixture of wine, food, people, colour, sea. It's just so rich in local history and culture. Yeah. Stop for lunch in Marzo Meme and just soak up those local seaside vibes. Go to Ortigia, which is like the most incredible place I've ever been to. I love it. It's just got, I don't know. It's like it's a vibe.
Yeah.
It's you get there and it's the old town of Siracusa. So you go across this little causeway into the old town, and it's just this crazy mix of ancient Greek ruins, Roman ruins, medieval streets where the washing's hung over. There's scooters zipping this way and that way. The market's going crazy with the fish vendors, and they're, you know, shouting each other at the fruit vendors across the way. And it's just crazy. And then you walk through these streets, and then you walk into this incredible Baroque piazza, with the Duomo, and it's just elegant and marble, and there's people hanging out, there's kids playing football. And then you walk a little bit further and you've got the sea in front of you. So it's like, it's just a bit of magic. Sicily is great. And then what I think is Sicily, chilled out Sicily, a version of Sicily is Puglia. Which again, you've got the coast, you've got the food, you've got the wine, but everything's a little bit more piano, a bit slower, you know, people are a bit more chilled out. Tourism hasn't really hit Puglia in a big way. It's still fairly relaxed in that respect. And it can be a little bit frustrating, but don't worry, everything is fabulous. Like the really chilled out, gorgeous Baroque city of Lecce, cute little town, the Monopoly on the water, where the whole place comes to life at nighttime, and there's like fairy lights strung up everywhere, tiny little piazzas, everyone's just mingling, having aperitivo, having this, doing this, doing that, and just eating their beautiful fish dinner, washed down with a local wine. I mean, it's just sensational.
And they've got the really unusual little houses there.
The Trulli houses, So they're actually it's iconic for the area, and you can actually stay in them. Some of them can be a little bit rustic, but they do look absolutely gorgeous dotted throughout there. So you just see these Trulli houses. They've got a conical roof, and they're painted white, and they've got a stone conical roof, and they sort of intermingle between the olive trees and the vineyards, and it's just, you sit there and you go, stop it. Please. This is too cute.
That sounds awesome. And I think, is that the latest James Bond movie started off at that town?
I think that's in Matera.
Yes. Is that down that way?
But that's in the region called Basilicata, which is just a little pocket in between Puglia and Abruzzo. And that's an amazing, amazing city which everyone should visit, because it's known for movies, it's been in Star Wars, it's been in James Bond, but it's got an incredible history. It's built into a ravine, and it was basically known as the shame of Italy. So it was very poor, and there was people that were living in like dwellings, which are caves, which is what the city is known for, and they're called Sassi. And so these Sassi caves are the oldest, some of the oldest dwellings in Europe. They're like thousands of years old. And Matera is one of the most oldest inhabited cities in the world. But what happened in the early 20th century is it became like a really sad place, and it was a lot of poor people there. So the community, again, if you're hearing this word community, has got together, and with the help of the local government and the Italian government, raised this city up, and it was the European Capital of Culture a few years ago, and it's now UNESCO listed, and it's an absolutely stunning place. Wow. And particularly at nighttime. So a lot of people go there on a day trip, got to hang around at nighttime to see it all lit up and just looking absolutely beautiful.
I think that's a secret with a lot of those little towns, isn't it? It's spending a night there, because people come for the day and then they leave again. I think there's probably examples of that all over Italy and Europe, full stop. But I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, if you can, we always say you should spend at least 2 to 3 days wherever you go, because by the time you figure out what you're doing and where you're going,
yeah, where you are,
all of those things, you know, even in the smaller towns, like you can easily make a little mistake and you're going to miss something incredible. So you need to sort of invest a little bit of time to make a base and explore from there. And I think a really good example was we were in Tuscany a couple of weeks ago and we stayed in this Agriturismo. Everyone should do when they're in Italy. Everyone must stay in an Agriturismo, which is a farm stay. Sounds a bit rusty. No. It can be quite luxurious. So the one we stayed in had a pool overlooking San Gimignano.
That sounds amazing. Yeah, because that town keeps popping up as a place to visit. Yeah, that sounds gorgeous.
Yeah, oh, and that's definitely on the tourist route, San Gimignano. Yeah, right. But if you go to San Gimignano during the day, it's full of buses and people, but you go there at nighttime.
Covered heaps about Italy, which is really wonderful. If we wind it back to Australia a bit, have you got a favourite region in Australia, which wines that you like or which regions you like to visit?
Yeah, well, being in Melbourne and being surrounded by so many amazing wine regions, the one that really holds my heart is the Yarra Valley, and that's because we've got some really strong family connections there, and I've got a really good mate who runs wine tours and out there too, and I've known her since I was a little child, and I spent a lot of time out there. My aunt ran a guest house for many years out there, and so I was always growing up around the Yarra Valley, and so that's my favourite. And you know, in the 2009 bushfires, they had a really it was awful, and I mean there was so much destruction of the vines and just the produce with damaged by smoke. So there's some Italian style producers that I really love. I do default to Italy and Italian things.
That's okay.
But I mean, I loved going to De Bortoli. The restaurant there is absolutely incredible. I've been there many, many times, and I just love the atmosphere there. And of course, I love their Noble One sticky wine.
Yeah,
so lovely. Good. Like, every time you give it to, you know, get someone from overseas to try it, they're like, I want 10 bottles of that.
Yes. And it's blue cheese or something. Yeah.
Oh, so good. But the thing about De Bortoli, and it's a bit emotional, is that they sort of sheltered a lot of people in the bushfires. And we actually had family friends that watched their property burn from the car park there. And so I have a real soft spot for them because they really, they're part of the community there. Again, community. Yeah, and that's an Italian thing. But I mean, I do tend to sort of more gravitate towards smaller wineries generally. And there's one really great one out there called Stefani Estate. And that's a family run winery. And the winemaker there is from Tuscany. And he's actually propagated some of his vines from the family vineyard in Tuscany and has brought them over to the Yarra Valley. So fantastic. That's pretty cool. The Yarra Valley holds my heart, but I did want to sneak in another mention, which was for an amazing wine making family that are in Heathcote, and that's called Vinia Marson, and they're taking some of the maybe lesser known Italian varieties from the northeast of Italy in Friuli and blending them to make some really delicious wines, and they're in Heathcote. But what I love about them is, and what's really special, is that they do their wine tasting experience how they do it in Italy. Now, when you go to Italy and you book your wine tours in, what you're going to find is everything's coming with food. Like I said, so, you know, we're matching the wines with food and we're making sure we're not just tasting wine, we're tasting it with food. So it's actually, it's not unusual, but it's not as common to just taste wine. You're basically going to be tasting wine plus food that they've made from their farm or, you know, around the neighbourhood or their community there. So that's what they do at Vinia Marson, is they do this whole tasting experience.
That sounds so good.
It's really important to know that when you're going to Italy, is that you're not going to be dashing around four wineries in a day. It's just not really how you do things there. So you need to make an appointment generally, especially if you're going in the harvest season in October, September, October, you need to make a booking because you can't just rock up and go, hey, I'm here for the tasting.
Right. That was a question I was going to ask, actually. That's good to know.
Well, you can for some of the bigger ones. So like Antinori, which is in Chianti, you can do that. Now, actually, Montepulciano is a good one to know because they do have cantinas, which are the like wine tasting rooms inside the town. So you can actually go into the town and taste wine there. even the group tour, because then they can drive you around. You don't have to worry about tasting the wine.
And do you have any suggestions of how to find those sorts of group tours? Like
my friend Ariana at KM Zero Tours in Tuscany, she just took us to these gorgeous place in Chianti, Il Bacio, the kiss. And just, you're just like pinching yourself. This is like vines for miles and like flowers and this cute little table set up for us. It was gorgeous.
Oh, that sounds so awesome.
It's wonderful. But the smaller ones, you really need to make a booking in advance, and you can do that by usually some of them might have a web form if you're lucky. Probably an email address or even a phone number. And if you find a phone number or a mobile number, Italians love WhatsApp. WhatsApp is the best way to contact people in Italy.
That's good to know. Yeah, that's great.
So you just WhatsApp people. So they're probably going to offer you some sort of degustazione, which is like the tasting of the wine with food as well. So, and you know what? It's the best.
It sounds wonderful.
Seriously, it could be better. And they're so generous, like, and they'll sit down and talk to you and explain what they're doing. It's all pretty relaxed. And, you know, they'll probably have set up this beautiful table with a view, and you're like, oh, I'll just stay here. Thanks.
Yeah, that sounds
so good. I don't need to leave.
So wonderful, Katie. That was just excellent. I love shining a light on the smaller areas and that as well.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. You will never regret it, honestly, going to Italy or even like in Australia to just seek out these smaller places where it's family run and to hear their stories and to understand what they're motivating them to make their wine and their passion behind it. So every time that we do that, we've had a special experience that is stuck in my mind that I remember forever. And yeah, I hope everyone can have that same experience too.
I really enjoyed my chat with Katie. I have found out about that Spello Flower Festival through listening to her podcast, so I was very excited to hear a bit more about it speaking with her. Hopefully you've picked up some new ideas if you're planning a trip to Italy too. And if you're heading around Melbourne, then check out her suggestions in the Yarra Valley and Heathcote. So all the suggestions that Katie mentioned are on the website in the show notes. And that wraps up this season of the Wine Delust podcast. Subscribe so you'll be first to get the new season when it drops. And the new season's a little bit different. I'm collaborating with the Australian Capital Territory Office for Women on a series about women in the wine and hospitality industry. We're going to meet women in all aspects of the industries, of course, including winemaking, but there's so many other jobs available that you might not know about. So keep an ear out for that one. And until next time, happy wine travels. For everything discussed today, check out the Wine Delust website. And if you're interested in trying some of the wines, we have some events coming up too. And subscribe to my newsletter to find out what else is happening.